Good morning. Good morning to day three of RTC 22 from Potsdam at CCCP. The first talk of the day by Daniel is about a tool he is working on that is called Radar, and what Radar actually is will be the first topic of today. Thank you, the stage is yours.
Hello everyone. Like all of you, I was very disappointed when the official RTC event was cancelled this year, but fortunately, the community is strong, and thanks to the organizers of this event, we can still meet here and have some fun. I've been attending CCC for the past 10 years, but this is my first time here on stage. And today, despite my imposter syndrome and stage fright, I'm still excited to talk to you about the project I've been working on for the past 2 years. So, here's what I'm gonna do today. First of all, I will start with the introduction to describe the problems that I was facing that gave birth to Radar. Then I will go into methodology, which will explain the basic concepts in Radar, how Radar works, its architecture, and so on. After, I will show you a demo, which will hopefully convince you to give Radar a try and integrate it in your own workflow. And I will end the presentation with short conclusions and the Q&A session. But before before we begin, let me introduce myself. I'm Daniel, I'm 30 years old, and I've been a penetration tester for more than 5 years. Before that, I worked 5 more years in IT, mostly as a sysadmin. And if you're asking yourself, how did I manage to get more than 10 years experience as 30 years old? The answer is simple. I'm a dropout. I don't have any degrees. So I've tried going to university twice, but it didn't work out for me. I was passionate about security since I was a kid. And back when I was going to the university, there were no security courses there. So I dropped out, and it worked out well for me. About 2 years ago, I started working on Radar, and later the same year, it became a part of OWASP project. So what exactly is Radar? I've been brainstorming with a friend to come up with a title for this presentation. And we ended up with this, OWASP Radar, a novel framework for manipulating HTTP processes of persisting sessions. This sounds complicated. We are bad at naming things. And I hope the next time I will come up with a shorter title for this presentation. But for now, bear with me. Radar was incepted to help make web authentication testing easier. But by now, it has evolved and can be used for all kinds of HTTP processes. Basically, Radar is a framework which helps you manipulate HTTP processes. And to do that, it defines a new DSL, domain-specific language, in contrast with GPL, general programming languages like Python, Java, and so on. And it uses this DSL to describe the information exchange between the client and the server. And since it's impossible to build a tool that will cover all your future needs, especially in pen testing security fields, I've built Radar with this fact in mind. So it allows the user to extend it with their own code. So it's flexibility is in its DNA. And the main code of Radar is written in Python, while the configuration files are written in a little known language called Hilang, or Hi, which is a Lisp dialect on top of Python. I will explain my decisions in a later slide. For now, let's talk about the problem. I was frustrated with the way existing tools with the approach of the existing tools when it comes to authentication. So when I was testing authentication, I ended up with something like you see in this screenshot in a barb suit's repeater. So basically, my workflow was like this. I had to go to on the first step of the process. I made some modifications. I sent the request. Then I had to go through the response body, find for the right piece of information I was looking for, copy it, go to the barb suit decoder, encode it, decode it as necessary, then come back to the repeater, go to the next step, paste it into the right spot, and resend again. And I didn't like this process. It's also error prone if you copy one character less, for example. So I needed a solution with much less clicks. Once you understand how the authentication process works, you usually want to automate it, or at least parts of it. With barb suit, this can be done using barb suit macros. And you can see them in the screenshot. So this works for simple cases. You can copy parameters from previous requests, put them into the next one, and you can also extract custom ones, either by using regular expressions or static strings. But this approach has limitations. For example, if one of those fields require to send the one-time password, which you have the secret for, then I don't know how to do it with the barb suit. It doesn't allow you for arbitrary actions. You might manage to do this by writing custom barb suit extensions, but I wanted a more flexible solution. Now let's take a look at how Zaproxy does it. And to automate the authentication process with the Zaproxy, you need to set up the context. Here you can see it how it looks like. You can choose from the drop-down menu some of the types of authentication, and you also configure the user, and you also need to set up the regular expression patterns, which will detect when the user is logged in and when is logged out. And while this looks trivial, it's not trivial to configure. And it's very hard to debug when things go wrong. And the most important part is, this will only help you if you want to automate parts of the automate authentication. It will not help you if you want to test the process itself. And here you can see it's also, and there's also script-based authentication. So Zaproxy provides you with some authentication scripts. And those, in theory, could be used to automate almost all kinds of authentication. But they can be used only inside the context. You cannot run those standalone, which is a deal breaker for my case because I needed to test the authentication process itself. Zaproxy also provides such a thing called Zest scripts. And it's an interesting feature. It's the closest to what I wanted to have when I was testing the authentication. And you can see them here. They can run standalone, but the configuration is written in JSON. You have a JSON file to set it up. And this also has some limitations. So the early radar prototypes were also using JSON for configuration. And it didn't work out that well. So I will discuss those limitations on a later slide. The problem with authentication is well known in the Zaproxy community. I guess in barb suit community as well. So here's a screenshot from Zaproxy webpage where they recommend you to disable or simplify authentication when testing your web app. And I totally understand this advice. Authentication does make your life harder, which is the main reason I ended up on this stage. But this is a bummer, especially if you are particularly interested in testing the authentication process itself. Zaprox and Barbsuit will not help you that much. So, I decided to build my own tool. At first, it was just an idea spread over several Python scripts. Then I put them into a package, and I needed a configuration file. So I used JSON. But JSON files grow big, and they get complicated fast, and editing it manually gets painful. There are also many other issues, like you cannot... So you need special syntax to reference previously defined items, and I haven't figured out an elegant way to process items, like encoding, decoding, do string operations, and so on. You also cannot easily reuse parts which you defined previously. Let's say you had three lines at the top of the file, which you wanted to reuse at the bottom. So I don't know how to do this in an elegant way using JSON. And all those problems could be solved if we had a real programming language for that. Which brings us to the interesting part. Why Lisp? To most people, Lisp is an ancient language that doesn't have much real usage today. But I disagree. I needed to create a language which defines the information exchange between the client and the server. And the Lisp languages are ideal for creating a custom DSL. It allows you to define your own syntax, and there is also this very interesting concept called homo iconicity, which is also called code is data and data is code. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of time to explain this into details, but in short, a programming language is homoiconic if the internal representation of the program can be manipulated as data using the language itself. And why is that useful? That brings us to the next part, metaprogramming. So you can write Lisp macros which look like regular functions, but they're not. Unlike regular functions, Lisp macros do not return a value. They return pieces of code, which is why it's called metaprogramming. You're writing code that generates code. And before I move to the next slide, I want to tell you a story. You can take your time to check the comic if you haven't seen before. But I started using Emacs like 10 years ago. Before that, I was mostly using Vim. Nowadays, I'm still using Vim for some tasks, but mostly Emacs. So I'm not here to start an editor war. But I fell in love with Emacs extensibility. How easy it is to change it, to modify how it works. And it's honestly pretty impressive what people are managing to do using Emacs. So, why am I telling you this? While I was battling with the JSON issues I described on a previous slide, at some point, it finally clicked. I needed to write configuration files, which is data, but they also needed to contain code. I could have invented a new language for that, but why bother? Lisp is here. Yeah, so I started playing with Lisp, and after a while, it all started to make sense. Lisp started to make sense. Macros started to make sense. And I've genuinely felt the great Lisp enlightenment you can see in this comic. So. I couldn't wait to try it all out in Radar. And by now, I hope it's clear why Lisp, but why Highlang? Well, the main reason is because it's based on Python. It compiles into Python code. You can access all your Python libraries, which is super important, especially in the security, because so many tools and libraries are using Python. And it's also relatively easy to learn if you know Python, which I assume a lot of you do. Now, we already covered the basics, let's look into the details. In my experience, a lot of pen testers see the authentication part as a black box. They just assume it's safe without testing it that much, which is a shame, because this leads to many undiscovered bugs. And with this talk, and Radar in particular, I'm aiming to make it easier for pen testers to test and understand complex HTTP processes, like authentication, but not limited to that. So next, I'm gonna show you my technique on how to reverse engineer the authentication process. And here you can see a screenshot with the Mitm proxy. It's another tool. And I captured all the requests that were generated while logging in on Reddit. And it generated about 400 requests. Most of those are not relevant to the authentication process. So from here, we start by removing everything that's not relevant. Most of those are JavaScript files, images, videos, and there are also some other. So we might end up with something like this, which is much easier to dig around. One approach from here is to start from the beginning and find out all the outputs, then reuse them until the end. But this is not always the best approach. For example, if the first request gives us back three cookies, we might assume all of them are important and reuse them until the end. But maybe just one of those cookies are actually used for authentication. Another way is to start from the end. So we start with a request which works only if the user is authenticated. And I picked this one. So from here, you can see we have three different blurred fields, which could potentially be used for identifying the user. So from here, to understand what's going on, we would need to remove everything piece by piece until it logs us out. So we end up with something much simpler. We try to make the simplest request, which will still return us an authenticated response. And from here, it's pretty clear that the only input which we need for this particular endpoint is the authorization bearer token. The first two headers are required for the HTTP protocol, and the rest are generated automatically by Python's request library, so those are not important. That means we only need this one input. How do we get it? We search for this string through the whole traffic and find out the first request, which gives us back this token as a response in the output. And this is what I found. So on the left side, you can see the request. On the right side, the response body with the access token, which I was looking for. So from this request, we only need one output, this access token. But what are the inputs that we need? Well, we have here several cookies, and we repeat the same process. We remove everything piece by piece until it, so we try to make the simplest request, which will still give us back our token. And I don't have time to explain this process until the end, so I just explained my technique. Now I need to move on to Radar, but you can continue this on your own if you're interested. Now let's talk about states. As it turns out, the little time I've spent at university wasn't totally wasted. So I've learned about finite state machines there. And to my university professors, if you're watching this, hello. This is awkward. I haven't been a good student, But as you can see, I ended up here talking about some of the stuff that you taught me. So you did a good job. Thank you. Moving on. Finite state machines is a mathematical model which can be used for a detailed analysis of how a system works. And a system is stateful if it remembers the previous events. HTTP protocol, for example, is stateless. Each HTTP connection is independent from previous ones, while the authentication process itself is stateful. So you need to complete each step of the authentication in right order in order to finish it. The state is the information which you remember about the system. And the system can be in only one of its states at any given time. I found out that the so-called mealy finite state machines can be used the best to model the authentication system. I also don't have time to explain this into details, but we can have multiple inputs, multiple outputs for each step, and the output values are determined both by the current state and its inputs. Here's how one such step would look like. In this case, we send the username, the password, and the CSRF token. And the server checks them and gives us back some outputs. In this case, two cookies. And we need to map the entire process using this. So we need to chain multiple states together, which will look like this. I remove the inputs and outputs for each step because it would not fit on the screen. It would get too complicated, but they're here. So basically, we start unauthenticated. We send the credentials. The server checks them. The server checks if multifactor is enabled. And if everything is correct, we get authenticated. Otherwise, we get to login failed. And that's it. That's how you model the authentication process using finite state machines. Now, how do we do that with Radar? Radar defines the concept of flows. A flow describes the information exchange that takes place during one step. So just one request and one input, one response. And we create it like this. Set V in Highlang is used to create a variable. So here, we created the variable init, which is a flow object that will send a GET request to the URL. URL in this case is a variable. A flow optionally can have some outputs. And in Radar, those are called plugins. I will explain them in more details later. Optionally, you can also have operations. Those are pieces of code which will run after we receive the response. And here's how it looks like. In this case, we have two flows, flow 0, flow 1. Each flow with the own request and response. The request optionally has some inputs, and the response optionally some outputs. And also, each flow optionally has some operations. And the main reason operations exist is to say which flow to go to next. But they can have many other uses as well. Another important thing is that the outputs from previous flows can be used as inputs in the next ones. This is how Radar shares information about the state between flows. To create a flow, you need to give it one request. I already said that. And to create one request, you need at least the URL. Everything else is optional. The method is specified via the class method, as you can see here. You can also create custom methods. It's allowed. You can give it cookies, headers, and the rest. So params are used in the URL, data in the request body. And you can also format it as either JSON or multipart. All request parameters can contain plugins. Those are used to share data between the flows. In this example, we'll send a post request, and the URL is also a plugin called Combine. Combine just combines multiple plugins and or strings and returns the final value. So in this case, it will append API test to a Revision base URL. Also, in the cookies, you can see a JSession ID, which is supposed to be extracted in a previous flow. That's how you share data. In a previous flow, you use it as an output. Here, we use it as an input. And also, in the params, param 2, you can see you can write real Highline code inside those parameters. Now, let's talk about plugins. They mostly used to share data between flows, but they can also be used to manipulate data, like URL encode, B64 encode, and so on. And they can also be nested. So, for example, let's say we got the prompt plugin, which will just ask the user for some input in the terminal. Then we want to URL encode it, so we combine those two. And I don't have time to explain them all into details, and the list is constantly growing. And the user can also write their own without touching the core. Operations, as I said, are small pieces of code that will run after the response is received. And the main reason is to control which flow to go to next. There's also success and failure operations, which will indicate whether the HTTP process completed successfully or not. The print and save operations I use to print in the terminal or save into a file the values of some plugins. Interesting one are also conditional operations. So for HTTP, we check the HTTP status. For grep, we check, we search through the response body for some string or regular expression. And match checks if some plugin matches some value. Depending if the condition returns true or false, we can run other operations. So you can nest those. That means we can run, we can say, for example, run flow A if HTTP status code is 200 and flow B otherwise. You can also even run real Highline code by using the Lisp code. And like plugins, users can write their own operations. Now let's talk about flow graphs. It makes for a much more flexible setup. You can chain multiple flows together and run them until the end or until success or failure operations return. They basically act as a pointer. You point to a flow and say start here, and it will run until the end. To create one is quite easy. Here we created the authentication flow graph, which points to the login flow. And you can run this from the command line, as you can see here. And optionally, you can also have a test flow for the flow graph. This is used just as an additional check to see, for example, if the user is successfully authenticated. And we can build complex setups like you can see here. You can have just single flows like flow 9, which will either return success or failure, or you can have complex networks like the rest. And from the command line, you can run either a flow, a flow graph, or any combination of flow graphs and flows as you want, which means you can run, for example, start with flow 4, then go to flow 11, then run flow graph 1 until return success, then go to flow 15, and so on. Any combination of flows and flow graphs is allowed. Now, with the demo part. So, before I actually show you how it works, I'm gonna explain to you some commands. So, the first two I'm not gonna use in the demo because I already have the code, but basically you can create a new project. So you need the project name and the high file name. And you can also edit it. Radar also allow you to search through your collection of proof of concepts. So you can filter either by project, by high file, and by flows and graphs. For the first example of the demo, I'm gonna automate some parts for the Juice Shop OWASP Juice Shop application, which is an intentionally vulnerable web application. So I'm not gonna focus on the authentication part here. I'm just gonna focus on the radar. And in this example, I automated the registration process. So here we created the flow graph register. So to actually register a new user in Juice Shop, you need three steps: to get the security questions, to actually register the users, and to give the security answer. And the register flow graph will start with the first flow, then go until success is returned. The first time we run it, we will register and log in with this user and return the access token. The second time we cannot do this because the user is already registered, so we need a new email for that, but we can just use login to get the same token. For the second example, I'm going to show you the SQL injection, which is located inside the email field when logging in Juice Shop. So to actually test it, I created a flow called login SQLi, which points to itself. And the flow graph will point to this flow. So basically, it will run in a loop until it returns success. Success will return when the server answers with HTTP 200, so meaning the user logged in successfully. And the last example is a little bit more complicated, so we need to exploit two different issues, and I chain them together. So basically how it works here. You need to go to the log in with the user, go to the user's profile page, and you can set up the username. And when you do that, the username is vulnerable to cross-site scripting. But it's not possible to exploit it directly because the server has some content security policy headers, which disallow you to do that. Therefore, we first need to modify the to exploit another vulnerability, which will modify the content security policy header. And this is located inside the... So you can set up your profile picture, and you can use it in a URL as well. So for the content security policy bug, instead of giving a real URL for your profile picture, you send a fake URL, but you append some attributes that will be appended to the header. You will see exactly how this works very soon. Now, so the first command, radar show, will just show all my configured projects, all the proof of concepts I have here. You can also filter and by partial match for the project. Here you have three matches, but I'm just going to show you the Juice Shop one. And you can see all the high files configured for this project. We can also see all the flows and all the flow graphs. The flow graphs are in red, and you can see Here we have a default flow graph, which is created by Radar automatically just for convenience. So you don't need to create a flow graph if you have just one. So it will be created automatically. Now I'm going to show you some. So I also don't have time to go into the details into all configuration. I will post all the Juice Shop files inside the repository after I'm finished with this talk. So let's take a look at just the first file. And here's how it looks like. I created the base URL here, which I'm going to reuse later. Then those are some plugins, which will help extract the data. And here's the username field, which will just print the part of HTML, which is vulnerable to XSS. So it's going to be easier to find out. And lastly, I have created the user with a password and security answer. So if I try now to log in with this user, it will not work because I haven't created it yet. Yes, but I can run register, then login. So this will send those requests necessary for registration and the login. So now it outputs the access token, which is needed. If I run the second time, it will fail because I cannot register it twice. But I can get the token just by using login. So this part works. The second example was SQLi injection. So he asked me for the input to use for the email field. If I put just random value, it will say invalid email or password. Makes sense. But if I put something including a code, it will send this SQL error. So we know we have an SQL injection here. I'm just going to use the solution because I already know it. And it exited with a successful login, even though I don't know the password for the admin. And here you can see the token and the user admin. Now, for the last example, by combining two different weaknesses. So first, we need to log in, then exploit the CSP issue, then the cross-site scripting. I think that's right. Yes. So here you can see the content security policy header, which doesn't work for us. We need to add a new attribute to script SRC to allow unsafe inline. So it asks me if I'm satisfied with the result. I say no, I want to change it. So I put a fake URL, then I add my attribute. And I add the rest of them. And hopefully this will work. So first we need to wait for the server to time out. And because it's trying to access this URL, which does not exist. And here you can see this image, the default one, is added to the content security policy, but it should be soon replaced with whatever we inputted here. Now we just need to wait a few seconds. And as you can see, it's already here. And I guess this should work. I am satisfied. Now the last issue, the cross-site scripting. Here you can see the original HTML code where this issue is encountered. If we just put username, you will see it here. But if we try a regular cross-site scripting, XSS, you will see that it gets filtered. So we see just layered XSS. I already know the solution, so I'm gonna use it. I don't have time to explain it. Let's use document cookie. And it seems like it works fine. Now, if we actually log in, it worked. And if I go to the account profile, I don't know why it's so slow. Then we see the cookie here. So, what's next for Radar? First of all, I need to finish the documentation. After the latest architectural changes, a lot has changed, and the documentation still does not reflect reality. So this is a priority right now. The command line interface is still a new addition to Radar. Previously, you had to write Python scripts, which invoke Radar as a library. And this is not very convenient. And speaking about convenience, I wanted also to create a REPL, read, eval, print loop. So instead of going to the source code, modifying it, then to the terminal again, and run Radar, we could just use like a Radar shell to do all those kinds of stuff. So work in real time to test it. Another thing I'm excited about is fuzzing. So previously, in early stages, Radar still had some very limited fuzzing. It didn't work out that well yet, but now, after all those architectural changes, it stopped working completely. So I need to fix that. And I'm sure that with proper fuzzing, we can find much more bugs using this, using Radar. Next, I want to have sessions. Every time you run Radar, we have a different set of inputs and outputs. And those can be considered a session. It would be helpful to save them into a file so that we can recall them later and maybe check for some session issues. It's also not very easy to debug. So you would need the to understand the source code if something is not working well. I need to improve that part as well. And speaking about Lisp and macros, I've just started using macros recently, like a few months ago. So I'm only just scratching the surface right now of what Lisp and macros can do for Radar. And I also want to spend time on that next. Another thing I'm really interested about, but I still need to do some research, is graph theory. So basically, we have a network, a graph. We know all the flows, we know all the inputs, we know all the outputs. I guess it could be, in theory, possible to look for patterns, to identify vulnerabilities based on our structure. I still need to do some research on that, because it's a complicated topic, but I'm very interested about this. And last but not least, I want to integrate it with other tools, which will benefit from having something like this. So in summary, Radar is not just a toy anymore. It can be used for real world use cases. During pen testing, I managed to automate a real life single sign-on providers like Microsoft or Auth0, so it works for real cases. But there's still a lot of work to do, a lot of bugs to be fixed, lots of missing features. So yeah, I'm happy to hear your feedback if you're interested, and obviously I'm looking for contributors if you want to help with that. And before going to the Q&A session, I want to thank my family and friends for supporting me through this journey. And here you can have all the links if you want to contact me or learn more about Radar. That's it. Thank you very much.
We thank you, Daniel, for your presentation. If there are any questions, you can talk to the microphone here in the room. I don't have the time to check the whole chat rooms online, but I think we have some questions from there. For the question, I think first one in the room.
Okay, so in your first picture where you connected different flows, there was something weird that one arrow was going to the edge of the flow and one arrow was going into the flow. And that doesn't sound like an elegant design decision.
Because which one?
It
this?
No previous boxes. One, so the left arrow is going to the border of the box, which sounds like a nice encapsulated design, whereas the other arrow goes into the box. So it's like you're mixing these layers that, well, it's not really a black box, but you have to go into the box.
Well, operations I use just to say which flow to go to next, but outputs are used as can be used as inputs in those. So those are not. So outputs are just to share information, but the operations say which to go next. Does it make sense?
A little bit. Okay, so that explains why you have these different types.
Yeah, it's different types. So one just says where to go next. The other just shows that the inputs can use the values from the outputs from previous ones.
Any other questions from the public? I think we have no more questions for you.
Okay.
So thank you for your presentation.
My pleasure.
And we can shut down the...